It's Friday, December 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, questions remain about U.S. immigrant visa process in the wake of a California mass shooting.
The United States has demonstrated its firm commitment to making available to Taiwan items necessary for Taiwan to maintain a sufficient self-defense capability.
China expresses concern about U.S. military sales to Taiwan. Also ahead, a new Star Wars movie brings fans strange new merchandise. Monetary fraud leads to interesting musical implications. All of that's coming up on today's International Edition. The friend and neighbor who supplied the guns to the couple who massacred 14 people in a California office 2 weeks ago has been arrested but not yet formally charged, according to authorities. If Enrique Marquez brought the weapons knowing that Syed Razan Farooq and his Pakistani-born wife Tashfeen Malik planned a terrorist attack, he could face life in prison. There is still no evidence that Farooq and Malik were part of a foreign terrorist group or an organized terrorist cell. Malik underwent three background investigations before she was allowed into the United States on a fiancé visa, which required her to marry Farooq within 90 days. Lawmakers in Washington are concerned the background investigations were not thorough enough. VOA House of Representatives correspondent Cindy Sain joins us. Cindy, lawmakers were pressing for some answers in a hearing today.
That's right, Jim. Ever since the San Bernardino shooting that left 14 people dead and 22 injured, Congress has been wanting Homeland Security to do something to try to prevent another massacre like that from happening again. So we had Homeland Security officials and State Department officials at a House hearing, and actually lawmakers from both parties, Republicans and Democrats, were upset, and they were saying the alleged woman shooter, the woman from Pakistan, Tashfeen Malik, who came to the U.S. on what's called a fiancé visa, the information is coming out that she was radicalized before she came. And lawmakers were asking, why didn't officials look at her social media post before she was allowed entry into the United States? And it did come out that at first it was reported that she had pledged allegiance to the Islamic State group on Facebook, and now it is coming out that these may have been private posts that she was carrying on with her husband, her American citizen husband, who was also one of the shooters. But people are asking, why are U.S. Homeland Security officials not looking a lot more closely at the social media accounts of anyone who wants to get a visa to come to the United States?
And what was the reaction from Homeland Security?
Well, they said that they are doing it, that they've had three pilot projects, and that this third project, pilot project as they called it, is going on now, is actually going to be applied to thousands of people. And they did point out that, as I said, in the case of Tashfeen Malik, it was private postings and not Facebook postings, and that there are some privacy concerns. But lawmakers said, you know, this is not good enough, and they wanted to know why U.S. officials have not been doing this for quite some time.
Do lawmakers express any other concerns in the process?
Yes, they also are looking at changing the visa waiver program, and that's actually going to be part of a massive spending bill, which is going on now. So they're taking different approaches. They're also going to put forward some cybersecurity legislation, and right now people are anxious and afraid, and members of Congress are trying to respond to that.
Well, Cindy Sain covers the Hill for us. Cindy, thank you so much for filling us in.
You're welcome.
Time now for us to check out reactions online to the CEO of a pharmaceutical company being arrested. We're talking about the Turing's Martin Tricchelli, who came under fire for increasing the cost of HIV drugs by more than 5,000%. That's a huge hike. Mm-hmm. Our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, is here. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. Tricchelli definitely got criticized for increasing the cost of the anti-infection drug Daraprim, but that is not why he got arrested. He got arrested Thursday morning on securities fraud related to his former company, Retrofin. And this is what Phil Mattingly from Bloomberg tweeted. Martin Tricchelli, Pharma Bad Boy / exclusive Wu-Tang record owner / self-proclaimed most famous Albanian ever arrested. He's on Twitter at Phil_Mattingly and covers the White House for Bloomberg Politics and TV. Another TV personality, Kara Roth, also tweeted about Shkreli. She wrote, "By the way, will they accept a Wu-Tang album as bail?" He recently spent millions on the only copy of a Wu-Tang Clan album that music fans would love to hear, but he told press he doesn't plan on listening to it anytime soon.
So what's the impact of his arrest?
Well, nothing good, obviously. Business Insider tweeted shares of his company, Dare Premise, down by 50% following the news. And before I go, I want to add, Jim, when Hillary Clinton slammed the decision to lower the hike up the cost of the drug, he replied to her on Twitter with LOL. Jim?
Well, that's quite a story. Thanks always for bringing us what's buzzing online. You can follow G. Abby Lee on her Twitter account. Guess what? It's at G. Abby Lee. And on our program's account at VOA_IE. And be sure to stay tuned for our music segment coming up a little bit later in the program. We'll have more on the Wu-Tang Clan. This is VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. China has reacted strongly to Wednesday's announcement that the United States plans to sell nearly $2 billion in defensive arms to Taiwan, the first sale of its kind in 4 years. The Chinese Foreign Ministry on Thursday summoned the American Charge d'Affaires to lodge a protest. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the latest sale, subject to congressional review, is no change from actions by previous U.S. administrations.
Today's notification is consistent with the Taiwan Relations Act and U.S. support for Taiwan's ability to maintain sufficient self-defense capability. I would hasten to add that there has been no change to our longstanding One China policy that's based on the three joint communiques and the Taiwan Relations Act. This is a policy that has been pursued by a handful of presidents, and what we've seen is that across decades and across that series of presidential administrations, the United States has demonstrated its firm commitment to making available to Taiwan items necessary for Taiwan to maintain a sufficient self-defense capability.
China scholar Bonnie Glazer of the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies tells VOA's Victor Beatty she does not view the Chinese reaction as alarming.
It is the third sale by the Obama administration of arms to Taiwan. It is a smaller package than the previous two. This is only $1.8 billion in sales, and it doesn't contain any advanced weaponry. So my guess is that Beijing is not surprised and is not as concerned as it might have been if the package had been much more substantial.
Well, it has expressed its displeasure and, again, reaffirmed its desire that such sales be stopped.
Well, of course, Beijing always condemns U.S. arms sales to Taiwan. It sees such sales as a violation of its sovereignty and an interference in internal affairs. Nevertheless, the Chinese, and particularly the PLA, have become more and more confident about their military capabilities in dealing with Taiwan and also their economic levers that they can use over Taiwan to influence policy and the relationship across the strait. So what they really fear most is a capability that the United States might sell to Taiwan that would be fundamentally new and potentially threatening. Submarines would be an example. Taiwan has wanted to purchase diesel-electric submarines, and the Bush administration had approved this sale in 2001, but the United States doesn't build diesel-electric submarines, and so that was not part of this package.
The U.S.-Taiwan Business Council welcomed the arms sale news, but questioned why it has been more than 4 years since the last sale and said the items were insufficient to meet an evolving threat from China.
Well, I think that it's a widely held view by many, and I think we will even see some reaction in the U.S. Congress, that the weapons are not really sufficient. The gap in capability across the strait is growing substantially, and it is difficult for the United States to provide Taiwan with sufficient defensive capability. But at the end of the day, there is much that Taiwan can do by itself. Weapons are really not the only answer. Taiwan has to ensure that it is demonstrating a will to fight, that it is using things like that are really inexpensive, like mine warfare, to prevent the mainland from attacking, or using amphibious landing capability to actually occupy the island. So there's much that Taiwan can do, and the United States is really just in a minor supporting role.
Bonnie Glaser says Taiwan's improving ties with the mainland are primarily economic, and there's no appetite among the Taiwan people for reunification. She says the growing discrepancy in the military capacity in favor of China makes the sale to Taiwan representing the political symbolism of continued U.S. support. You don't have to reside in a galaxy far, far away to know that there's another installment of the Star Wars franchise in movie theaters, Star Wars: The Force Awakens. You may be familiar on your own or about some of the multitude of Star Wars memorabilia that has been produced over the past four decades. International Business Times reporter Oriana Schwint joins us to tell us about some of the more unusual items now.
Oh, definitely. Everything from coffee creamer, if you want a little Chewbacca in the morning, I guess, to, you know, jewelry, to, you know, Crocs with with the cast's face on them.
What are some of the more unusual things that you have seen that carry the Star Wars logo?
I will say the Crocs were a little surprising. I mean, you expect, you know, kids, they love anything with Star Wars, you know, that's fine, cereal, whatever. But adult Crocs with, you know, the cast on them is a little weird to me.
Well, I'm sure if you dress up and go to the movie, that might be appropriate.
Sure, but that's, you know, $50 is a lot for a one-time thing.
Well, it might replace the bedroom slippers.
Perhaps. I don't own a pair myself, but I do hear they're quite comfortable. Or, you know, maybe you're a fry cook and you just want to show your support. Or maybe they, you know, put a little force in your life.
The coffee creamer is an interesting one. Tell me a little bit about that.
Nestle has five special Star Wars-themed Coffee Mate flavors. Really, it's just the packaging, but it's, you know, it's R2-D2, it's C-3PO, it's Darth Vader and Boba Fett and Chewbacca. But what's interesting to me is it's all characters from the old Star Wars movie. None of the new guys made the cut. You don't see BB-8 there, which, you know, I can understand why. There's a lot of nostalgia out there, and you want to sort of play to that, and that makes sense.
And maybe some brand familiarization, and, well, they learned the fact that you can package it five different ways to sell perhaps five times as much.
Hey, here's hoping. Although, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to some marketing folks about this, and for them, really, it's mostly about cutting through the clutter that's out there, especially during the holiday season. You're inundated with ads from everyone and everything. And, you know, especially in the case of something like, there's a few Dodge commercials out there that use some clips from the film and specifically the music, that classic John Williams score. You know, you might just be putzing around the house, but you hear that and you start to pay attention. So really, that's the upside for them. No one's going to say no to higher sales if that happens. But really, it's about getting people to pay attention again.
What are some of the other things that you have found that we potentially can take home with us?
CoverGirl has a line, has several different themes of makeup lines that you can sort of collect and use. There's a stormtrooper-themed line. There's Jedi-themed line. There's droid. And the models that they depict have, like, it's like Queen Amidala from the Star Wars prequels. That might be a little ill-advised making us remember that. But it does look cool if it's a little labor-intensive, perhaps. But it's not too bad. And there's also Star Wars charms from Kay Jeweler, which wants you to choose the light or dark side through your jewelry, which is certainly feels a little trivial. Maybe I'm just a horrible cynic.
From a galaxy far, far away, we have many products to choose from. And Oriana Schwint, you're a TV reporter for International Business Times, showing us all of these wonderful and weird creations that have come upon us. Be sure to stop online and check out her report, and she'll show you all this stuff. Oriana, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
The controversial CEO of a drug company, Martin Tricchelli, was arrested by FBI agents in Manhattan December 17th for allegedly operating a Ponzi scheme where he defrauded investors in one company and used that money to pay off investors in a hedge fund that he managed. But it turns out he was also the buyer of a one-of-a-kind album by the rap group Wu-Tang Clan. International Edition's David Byrd discusses the case and its implications with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee.
So, about a year or so ago, we were hearing that the Wu-Tang Clan had released this album that they were going to put up for auction. And they anticipated receiving millions of dollars for this album because they were making only one. They weren't going to release it beyond the one. They wanted it to be sort of like any other work of art. It was rare and high quality and therefore expensive. So we found out that this piece had been purchased for $2 million. And I mean, it's not just the CD, it's packaged beautifully in a silver and nickel-plated box. It has a 174-page manuscript with lyrics and credits and backstories. And then there was also part of the deal, an agreement that the buyer had to wait 88 years before he or she could release the album to the public. So this was a huge deal, and we all wondered who bought this album. Martin is probably one of the most despised people in the world. So when we discovered recently that he was the one to purchase the album, we thought to ourselves, now what will the Wu do? Because, as you say, they try to be as responsible as they can. They obviously are very concerned about the community. That's what their whole repertoire really is about, is telling the stories of their community. And so RZA, who is one of the more outspoken members of the group, came out and said, number one, they had no idea who he was, what he was up to, that he was involved in hiking up the cost of pharmaceuticals, and now he's just been indicted on a Ponzi scheme. So that's recent. And so they were going to just donate the majority of the proceeds from the sale of the album to charity. So essentially, they're distancing themselves from this guy. And just a few hours before we came on the air, I read a story that said that Martin is not happy, and he thinks that they ought to show him a bit more respect, because as of today, because of him, Wu has $2 million extra dollars in their pocket, which they don't, because as I just said, they donate the money to charity.
Well, the thing is, too, that he was in the news previously because he jacked up the price of a drug that is used to fight toxoplasmosis. He's the head of a pharmaceutical company.
Right, right.
And he jacked up the price from $13.50 a pill, $13.50, to $750 a pill because he said it costs a lot for research and development.
Yeah.
It got to the point where even Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton said, we have got to do something about price gouging by big pharmaceutical companies.
Sure.
A backhanded reference to Mr. Shkreli. Whether he will last long in federal prison is another question. But again, in the United States, you are innocent until proven guilty. But as you mentioned, the FBI took him away in handcuffs in Manhattan for being part of a scheme where he defrauded investors in one company and tried to pay off investors in another with the money he got from the first group.
Yeah.
It's called a Ponzi scheme. Mm. What do you think? Let us know. You can send a tweet to Shauna at VOA Lady DJ. You can also send one to me. I'm David underscore DBird. That's BYRD. And, of course, you can log on to our website, voanews.com.
Well, we are certainly glad that you've invested your time with us for listening to International Edition. You can find us always at voanews.com. That's our website, available to you each and every day, any time of the day or night. You can also follow us on Twitter for all the very latest at VOA underscore IE is our Twitter handle. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Zeynep Abdel-Rahman. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Even as the world marks the 67th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, China continues to crack down on rights defenders and others who seek to peacefully question official policy and contribute to the public discourse on China's future. Since July, the Chinese government has detained nearly 300 lawyers and activists. The United States has called for the release of more than 20 such people who remain in custody, as well as Ilham Tati, Ken Pokartsi, Zhong Kai, Gao Yu, and Liu Xiaobo. Rights lawyer Pu Jicheng, who was arrested following his participation in a private meeting to peacefully mark the 25th anniversary of the violent suppression of the Tiananmen Square protests, is currently on trial. He stands accused of making criminal comments online, inciting ethnic hatred, and picking quarrels and provoking troubles. Pu Jicheng has been detained since May 2014. The United States mission to the United Nations recently expressed concern with China's national security law, noting that it codifies an expansive and vague definition of national security that invites arbitrary and situational interpretation by security forces. In addition, the United States is also concerned that the government's draft foreign non-governmental management law would unreasonably constrict civil society and undermine people-to-people exchange. It is incumbent on China to uphold the rights enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Marking the 67th anniversary of this important document on December 10th, President Barack Obama said, "We will continue to lift up the lives of all who yearn to exercise their inherent human rights and to shine a light on those still living in the darkest pockets of our world."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.